Good afternoon. We're going to bring this subcommittee meeting of the Department of Fish and Game to order. It's February 18th, 2013, and it's approximately 3:05. Do we have anybody online? If so, please identify yourself for the record.
This is Jeff Regnart, Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Director of Commercial Fisheries.
Hey, Jeff, and you're going to be working with the department, so we'll let your folks call you in when needed, and if we have some questions, we'll ask you, okay?
Thank you, sir.
Okay, so once again, my name is Senator Dunleavy, Chair. Next to me, I have Senator Egan. Also on the committee would be Senator Hoffman and Senator Stevens. We're anticipating Senator Stevens will be here shortly. So with that, we have our folks from Fish and Game that are going to give us an overview of the governor's budget requests, supplemental amendments, et cetera, et cetera. So could we have come to the table, the folks that are going to present, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Cora Campbell, Commissioner for the Department of Fish and Game. With me at the table is Deputy Commissioner Kevin Brooks. He and I will be presenting today. Also in the audience is the Director of Sport Fish, Charlie Swanton, and Ben Mulligan, our legislative liaison. And as you already heard, Director of Commercial Fisheries, Jeff Regnart, is online in case there are questions.
Thank you very much. So with that, can we begin with the overview? And Senator Egan, at any time if you have a question, let's just ask us.
Thank you. And I think that hopefully you have a handout that we prepared that just has some basic information about the department and then runs through our increments as you requested. The first slide is simply an organizational chart. It shows that we have six divisions and one section, as well as two agencies that are independent but are attached to us for administrative purposes, and that's the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission and the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council. We have three large management divisions. Those are the divisions of commercial fisheries, sport fisheries, and wildlife conservation, and then three smaller divisions: administrative services, subsistence, which is primarily a research division, and then habitat, which is primarily a permitting division, as well as the board support section, which provides logistical support to the Board of Fish and Board of Game process. The next slide that you have just shows a quick breakdown of our budget, both by division on the left and by funding source on the right. And you can see, as I mentioned before, that the management divisions are the larger divisions. They make up the bulk of our budget on an annual basis, with the smaller divisions accounting for less of the budget. And you can also see that our three major funding sources are general fund. We have a large portion of federal funds, and then the Fish and Game Fund, along with some smaller funding sources that make up the remainder of our annual budget. The next slide shows the positions that we have budgeted. We have 933 full-time with just over 1,700 total positions. The reason that we have nearly as many part-time and seasonal positions as full-time positions is simply the nature of our work. In the field season, there's a lot of work to be done that's not necessarily year-round work, so that's why you see that pattern. And you can see in these graphs again that the large divisions make up the bulk of our personnel, and the smaller divisions account for fewer employees. So those are the overview graphs that we had, just to give you a flavor of the department. And then the presentation moves on to talking about the increments that we have in our FY14 operating request. And Kevin Brooks is prepared to walk you through those in detail. But before he does, I want to give you a sense of what we were thinking about when we put our budget request together this year. The largest item in our budget request overall is actually on the capital side, and it's a $10 million request for the Chinook Salmon Research Plan, implementation of that plan. And that's a plan that identifies 12 important indicator stocks throughout the state and is the result of a process that our scientists went through in cooperation with our federal counterparts and the folks at the university to identify the strengths and weaknesses in our assessment for those stocks and identify projects that need to be implemented in order to increase our total understanding of what's happening with those stocks. And so that plan is available and out if you wish to look at the detail, but that certainly was a driving factor when we put our budget together because of the impacts that we're seeing around the state this year as a result of the need to restrict fisheries because of low Chinook runs. When we go through the items in the operating budget, what you'll really see there is a couple of things. One is that some of these are the result of a need to respond to availability of funding, primarily federal funding. We have a couple of different federal funding sources, and those vary in availability year to year. And so what we have is that we have some really core services, stock assessment type services, that are on federal funds. And when those funds are no longer available, you may see a request to replace those funds with general funds. We do have a test that we apply internally when something like this comes up, just to ensure that the project is really something that's core to our responsibilities and something that we think is appropriate as a state responsibility. But you will see some increments here that are an attempt to respond to shifting availability of federal funds. The other thing that we looked at when putting this budget request together was we looked at places where our salmon management primarily has really been eroded over time by the need to absorb costs and inflationary pressures. And so there are some projects that we're no longer doing that we feel that we should be doing, or projects that we're not running for the full season that should be full season projects. And so those are places where we feel like an investment of state resources would result in additional fishing opportunity. And so we identified some of those in the budget request this year and have some increments that are intended to bring those projects back up to full strength. But if there are no questions on those general comments, I would just turn it over to Kevin for the detail on the increments.
Any questions, Senator? I should have asked this early on, I apologize. Do you have is there a departmental mission, vision?
We do have, sorry, Mr. Chair, we do have a departmental mission statement. Each of the divisions also has a mission statement. I didn't include each of those in your packet, but we can easily provide.
Please do that.
Them for
Thank you.
You. Yes.
Take it away.
Okay. I was so ready to give you our mission and the tie to the Constitution and statute, but
we can give that later.
We can certainly provide that to you. Mr. Chairman, we have a number of changes, and starting on page 5 of the handout, these run through in a component order within the budget. They also tie. I've tied them. The first column is a page number where you can find them in the short form book that you all would have as well. With the commissioner's introduction and kind of our philosophy for putting these in, we'll start with the first item. In Southeast Commercial Fisheries Southeast Region, which is a salmon stock identification projects for $550,000 GF. This particular increment replaces some expiring federal funds that we were getting from the Alaska Sustainable Salmon Fund, and primarily it funded work on sockeye salmon stock identification. And the program consisted of port sampling to determine stock composition of commercial landings. It's a critical part of the Pacific Salmon Treaty, and so we, because the funds were expiring, we raised this to the level of requesting a replacement in general funds for it. So the commissioner pointed out that we have our own test internally, and we try and set up projects with discrete start and end dates, especially if they're on a federal funding source. But over the years, some of our core management programs have ended up on federal funds, and this particular stock composition project is one of those. Second part of that funds a biometrician effort also related to that Pacific Salmon Treaty.
Oh, sorry, Senator.
Mr. Chair, thank you. So, Kevin, This included, this was federal funding, now it's state?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Egan, it was from the, we had capital funds that we were getting under the Sustainable Salmon Fund. And it's for about a decade, we've been getting that money. It started at about 20 million, it's now about four. So it's gone down and it, you know, for a long period of time, this core function related to Pacific Salmon Treaty was funded by the Sustainable Salmon Funds.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, the second item, Mr. Chairman, is in the Central Region, Susitna River Drainage Sockeye Project for $155,000. And this is a series of three sockeye weirs on the Chilatna, the Judd, and the Larson lakes up in the Susitna Valley. Mm-hmm. They're previously funded by Cook Inlet Aquaculture Association. And again, their funding source is dried up. These are key enumeration projects for fisheries in the region and raised to the level of requesting replacement funds to continue the effort. This would fund eight seasonal positions at the three different locations there to staff the weirs at the lakes. Okay, the third item. It's in the AYK region of Comfish. It's a Tanana River Sonar Project operational cost. This is actually a project that came into the budget in FY13, current year. We had $200,000 in funding. There was a one-time capital cost to set up the site, the sonar site, and then $200,000 in operating, recognizing that the funding started mid-summer last year on July 1st. And so at the time, it was documented that the full year funding would require another $175,000 to bring the total seasonal funding up to $375,000 total. So this $175,000 is the year two increment to bring that to full funding for the season. Next item then in the AYK region again is assessment of annual salmon escapement for $300,000. This funding is for escapement enumeration in the Aniak River drainage and to maintain the Shinjak River sonar project. And on any of these, Mr. Chairman, if there's any kind of questions, Mr. Regnard is online, that he would be able to answer specific questions on them. Next item then, page 19, Westward Region, Kodiak Office Building Maintenance and Operations. We have a new facility that was built on Near Island. It's been completed after a couple years now of construction. We're going to take occupancy of that building, I believe, in April. And this is the maintenance and operation costs to run that facility, from everything from electricity to heat to snow plowing and that sort of thing. We're also vacating a building in Kodiak that's owned and operated by DOT, and they're going to backfill that with other state agencies in the Kodiak area. The next item, also on page 19 in the Western region, is the salmon assessment project increment for $150,000, and this is funding to support salmon assessment projects. Funds will be allocated for Karluk River, Chignik River, Nelson River, and Bear River weirs, totaling $100,000. And then the remaining $50,000 would be used to reestablish historical aerial survey coverage in the region. Mr. Chairman, the next item on the list, again in the Westward region, is $300,000 in test fish receipts for crab pot survey and training onboard observers. This is an effort that was previously, we had federal funds to do this. The federal funds are not available, but using the test fish receipts from fishing on those crab stocks to pay for the management of the fishery is an option that keeps it out of a general fund consideration. The next item then in our special projects component is $465,000 in statutory designated program receipts for various resource management revenue contracts that we have. And each year we do basically a true-up of our anticipated contracts that we have with private non-governmental parties, and this gives us receipt authority to collect revenue from those sources on projects that we collaborate and do work for them on. And then the next item, again, in special projects, we're reducing excess receipt authority, $800,000 in federal receipt authority, and then $1,005,000.7 in GF program receipt authority. And that particular item, Mr. Chairman, is tied to a dive fishery assessment on Southeast Dive Association. We call it SARDFA, Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fishery Association. They assess themselves on their catch, and we were passing that money through to them through the Comfish budget, and there's language proposed. It's something we worked on with Ledge Finance over the last interim here to put language in the budget that just takes those retained taxes and passes those to the Dive Fishery Association and takes it out of the Comfish budget. So this $1 million decrement reflects that change in how we account for that revenue. The next item then, moving to the Division of Sport Fish, is a request to shift $570,000 to general funds. The funds are Aquatic Resources Project. This is a project that it's tied to Title 4615, or the Water Use Act, which ensures adequate amounts of fresh water are left within natural systems to support fish and wildlife that is important to Alaskans. Historically, this has been funded with angler dollars, and it's the federal aid and Fish and Game Fund match 3-to-1. And
may I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
What determines what RDU or what division or where does something fall? What determines that? For example, up at 15, you have a sockeye project that's under commercial fish, and this particular issue is under sports fish. What's the determination that decides where those are placed?
Mr. Chairman, with regard to the sockeye project, that was previously done by the Cook Inlet Aquaculture Association, and that whole permitting of the PMPs is a Comfish function, and so that dictated that particular one. I think across the state, I think if you talk to the two directors, they might be more heavily invested, if you will, in different species in different regions. We do a lot of work in Southeast tied to the Pacific Salmon Treaty, and sport fish does some of the enumeration and creel surveys related to that. So there's some of it's just history and how they've evolved over the years, but and then ultimately it's the primary beneficiary of the resource as well, and we have a federal mandate on the DJ money and sport fish as well as the license revenue that it has to benefit the recreational fishery, and so we have to maintain consideration of that requirement as well and how we spend the money in sport fish. In the commercial side, if it primarily is general funds, and there can be multiple beneficiaries and often are, where you have the commercial fisheries catching fish and recreational anglers as well. But we have a higher threshold on the sport fish side that we have, the expenditure of those dollars have to benefit the recreational fishery.
Okay, thank you.
So with this particular project though, the water shop we call it, this is basically gauges and streams to make sure we have appropriate flows. Historically, this has been a sport fish funded project, but there are multiple beneficiaries of the effort. And given the challenges that Sportfish has had with both their federal funds and their license revenue, this would provide relief by shifting it to the general fund. And it would also recognize that there's multiple beneficiaries besides recreational anglers. The next item, Mr. Chairman, if I could maybe take these a little bit out of order. We've got three items for wildlife conservation. Two of them are related. We're doing fund source changes from program receipts to fish and game funds of 92.4 in the wildlife conservation component, and then another 303.9 in the hunter ed component. This is a result of a federal review that we had, and the result of that was that program income from programs that we run, in this case it's our shooting ranges as well as sanctuary access permits, there's a requirement that the income derived from those efforts be deposited into the Fish and Game Fund. And a few years ago, this there was a shift to move this funding into the as general fund program receipts, and this would just move it back as a Fish and Game Fund. So it's an accounting cleanup, if you will. There's no change in spending. It's just which pot of money we're putting that in, and more appropriately putting it back into the Fish and Game Fund where the federal requirements specify. There's also a language section that goes with that, and this is another item. We've worked on this with Ledge Finance, and I think everyone's I won't speak for them, but I think there's general agreement that this is an appropriate thing to do. And there's a language section that would make the deposit to the Fish and Game Fund of these particular receipts. The other item in wildlife conservation is a $2.5 million increment. We've talked about declining federal funds. In this particular area of our budget, we have increasing federal funds. It's been referred to as an Obama bump. But basically, there's been an increase of guns and ammunition sales, and the funding for this program, the PR program for Pittman-Robertson program for wildlife conservation, is derived from an excise tax on guns and ammunition. And so when those sales go up, the amount available to the states also goes up. So all 50 states are apportioned revenue from the program. Alaska is one of the maximum states. Based on our size, the two criteria are size or population, and so we're a maximum 5% state, and we have an increase in federal revenue available to us for wildlife management programs. It's a three, like the sport fish side, it's a 3-to-1 match, and so we have a $500,000 request for general fund match to this funding. Historically, we've used fish and game funds as match, but our revenue on license sales is flat, and so we don't have additional fish and game fund revenue to match. We actually, if you did the math, this isn't quite a 3-to-1; it's a 4-to-1. But we're using some existing fish and game funds that we have in the budget, but would need an additional $500,000 in GF match to match against these federal funds. Moving on then, Mr. Chairman, the next item is $87,600 in the administrative services component to pay for services provided by the Department of Administration. This is something I think, you know, Ledge Finance has done a good write-up on it in the budget overview book that they did. There's increased cost in the Department of Administration related to everything from risk management insurance to running the computers to HR, and so those are fees that are assessed to all 15 departments via RSA, and it's I think the total costs are anticipated to be $7.3 million enterprise wide, and the governor was requesting $4 million, with agencies absorbing a share of the remaining $3.3 million. So our allocation under this formula is the 87.6. It's estimated that our costs are costs that we'll have to absorb are 292.1. And finally, Mr. Chairman, on the operating side, we have a $185,000, what we call an Inc. M here. This is for the Habitat Division for Title 16 and Title 41. Pre-project reviews, permitting, monitoring, and compliance. These funds were approved in the 13 budget in the current year, and we came with this request last year, it was changed to a one-time item, but truly the functions that it funds are basic core ongoing efforts in the Habitat Division. And so this would put that funding into the base budget. And the permitting, monitoring, compliance activities are a fundamental component of resource development throughout the state. This has its basis in the funding that went away for the Division of Habitat with the loss of the Alaska Coastal Management Program of about $100,000 there, and our Forest Resources and Praxis Act of $85,000 that happened a couple years ago. So, Mr. Chairman, that's the extent of new increments. The next page, on page 6, we had a list of ink, what Ledge Finance designates as ink tees, and I was prepared to talk about those.
Let's just take 1 second and welcome Senator Stevens. Senator Stevens, we're on in this booklet on page 5.
Thank you.
Actually, morphing into page 6.
Okay.
And there were just, there was like one or two questions on page 5, so you come at a pretty good time. So we're in the page 6 now, and I interrupted you, and I'm sorry. I just wanted to recognize Senator.
That's okay, Mr. Chairman. I had some general comments on these, and just that over the years, a lot of the projects that the department puts in the field or in the water tend to have a fixed life to them, 2, 3, or 4, or 5 years. And so over the years, there's been initiatives both by the governor and by the legislature to do various projects within the department's budget. And Ledge Finance came up with this category of increment, an ENT for our temporary increment. And all of these, the first 6 or so came in during the FY13 cycle. The last 4 on the page came in during the FY12 cycle. And you can see in the description, in parentheses, it shows the duration of the funding. But each year they show up in the short form as an ENT. And so these are a continuation of ongoing projects that have been previously approved by previous legislatures. And I don't have a separate presentation on each of these projects other than to note them for you and point them out. And certainly we could answer questions on them if you had any.
So does this take us over to 7 now?
Yes, sir.
Capital. Is there any questions so far, senators? So these are your requests for this year on page 7, capital.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and we've gone through these in the full committee. Certainly can walk through them now for the benefit of the members.
Let me ask a question too. The cameras would be under what request, the new cameras that you're asking for?
The second item on the capital list.
Okay, 750. So I think I may have asked the question the other day, and if I have, if we can go over one more time. Has there been any discussion or review as to whether the, and this is mainly for Caribou is my understanding?
Yes, sir.
If that could occur with purchasing some satellite time. And I think one of the comments was, you know, it might work, but not on a cloudy day. And that part I understand, but with the exception of last year, not every day was cloudy. So I'm just wondering, has that been looked into at all? Is there cost savings in doing that? Just please review that one more time with me.
Mr. Chairman, actually it has, and we went back and talked to the folks, but we've done contracts for satellite tracking with various radio collars and things like that, and satellite time is extremely expensive, and so the cost of doing that versus having our own cameras is over time would be much higher.
So you feel this would be a less expensive approach to getting what you need?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now one last question on game. The wood bison down in Portage, my understanding is that they're going to be moved within a year or two. Is that correct?
So, Mr. Chair, we haven't made a final decision about what to do with those wood bison yet. They're what we've been waiting on is Fish and Wildlife Service has published a draft, what they call a 10J rule, that sets forth certain conditions about how you manage a non-essential experimental population of what is technically listed as a, under the ESA, under the Endangered Species Act. We're waiting to see what the final rule that lays out those conditions look like. There are some specifications in there that would be very important to the state to maintain, so for us to feel comfortable putting those animals on the landscape. So we're looking to make sure that those protections that we sought are maintained in the final rule before we release the animals. But yes, certainly our eventual hope would be that we would feel comfortable in the protections and that we could release them.
The protections you're referring to are the designations?
Mr. Chair, the protections that I'm referring to are things like specifying that the state will have management authority, specifying that that we can make the decision at any time about whether to remove the animals from the landscape, those types of protections, because certainly the last thing that we want to do is introduce an Endangered Species Act listed species if it comes with all of the hurdles and bureaucracy and potential restrictions that go along with an ESA listing. So those kinds of restrictions shouldn't be there in this case. That's why it's designated as a non-essential experimental population, and certainly it's consistent with the intent of the Endangered Species Act to allow for a reintroduction that's going to benefit the overall population. But we just want to be certain that we're not signing ourselves up for unintended restrictions before we do a reintroduction.
And one last question along the wildlife species introduction issue. What is the trigger, what's the mechanism for Fish and Game to decide if in fact they're going to reintroduce or introduce a new species to Alaska? How does that process occur?
So, Mr. Chair, we're very cautious when it comes to introductions and reintroductions of species because of the potential effects that could have on all the other species that they would interact with, as well as habitat and other things. In this case, the wood bison effort, it started before my time, but this is a species that used to exist in interior Alaska. And so it's an attempt to reintroduce a species that used to be on the landscape that would provide hunting opportunity, opportunity for food for people in the region. So I believe that there was an assessment conducted again, before my time, but about the potential risks, interactions with other species, and the fact that these species used to exist on the landscape and provide opportunity, and we know that they can survive and thrive in some of the areas that we've identified, I think were probably some of the deciding factors in making this decision.
Okay, and does it come from the department? Does it come from legislators? Does it come from the governor? Does it come? What usually starts that process? Just that'll be the last question on this I have.
So, Mr. Chair, in this case, I believe that the impetus for the project, and again, this has been in the works for quite some time, but I believe the impetus was actually some users in the area who were interested in the reintroduction, interested in seeing this species restored, and interested in the hunting opportunity that it provided, who came to the department and worked with department biologists to bring the project along. And I believe that would generally be the case, that there would be an interest out there that we would have to evaluate. But again, I would just say that we would take a very, very cautious approach to anything like that.
Thank you. Senator Egan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just Commissioner or Kevin, can you fill me in on this $10 million UGF request for Chinook Salmon Research?
Through the chair,
so I'm
Senator
on the full
Egan.
Committee.
What line is that?
It's, Senator, it's on page 7, top line.
First on the capital request there.
Certainly, I'd be happy to. As I mentioned earlier, we've identified that we're in a period of low productivity for Chinook salmon, and I think most people, if not everybody, is aware that as a result of that this summer we had to restrict a number of fisheries important fisheries that folks rely on for food or income or recreational purposes, and that there were really significant impacts from that throughout the state. That's what led to the request for a disaster declaration for the Yukon and Kuskokwim and Upper Cook Inlet areas. And so in response to that, the department undertook an effort to evaluate our existing Chinook salmon research program. And for 12 indicator stocks around the state, so everywhere from the Yukon down to southeast, we've selected 12 stocks that we believe are good indicator stocks for regional trends. We evaluated those stocks and looked at our stock assessment throughout the life cycle. So what do we know about adults? What do we know about escapement? What do we know about harvest? What do we know about smolt out migration, early marine survival, all those things that you'd need to know to truly understand what's happening with the species and why it's in a period of low productivity, and to provide better forecasting about what the future is with that species, more precise management. Those were some of our goals. And so for those stocks, we developed this Chinook Salmon Research Plan, and we worked with university scientists and federal scientists to do that. But so for these 12 stocks, what this would fund is it would fund the projects that we've identified as gaps in our current stock assessment. And those are primarily things like we don't do much smolt out migration work for Chinook salmon, so we don't really know what we're putting into the marine environment for most of these stocks. That's an important thing to understand if you want to determine whether your survival problem is in freshwater or if it's in marine water, what stage of life it's in. There's a significant amount of coated wire tagging work that's included here. So, and that's a program where we can insert very small tags into the smolts when they're migrating out, and then we can account for mortality on those stocks when they're harvested, whether it's in federal waters fishery or marine waters fishery, and we can pinpoint where those Chinook salmon came from and where they're headed to give us a complete picture of mortality throughout the life cycle. So there's also some work included just to shore up our enumeration of returning adults for streams where we don't believe that we have a robust picture of that. But those are the types of projects that are funded within this Chinook Salmon Research Initiative.
Senator. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a follow-up. So you're not, because this is a capital budget request, you're not stealing from any other region. I mean, I fully support what you're trying to do, but I just want to make sure that other regions aren't going to be, that the research will continue in the other regions.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Egan, that is our intention, that this would be in addition to our existing research programs to fill some of these gaps, but not that it would take away from the work that we currently have ongoing. And some of these projects are projects that you can do for a period of time, learn what you're going to learn and discontinue the project. We may find as we move along that some of these other projects are things that we really should be doing on an ongoing basis. So this funding is currently in the capital budget in recognition of that pattern, and it may be, again, as we go along and this funding starts to expire, we may find that some of those projects are things that really should be on the operating side. It's information that we should be gathering year to year, but it's not all that kind of information.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, just going back, I apologize. I couldn't get away from an earlier meeting, but line 19, of course, the Kodiak office building, I wonder if you'd comment on that. And is this, this is money for the new building in maintenance and operation, I assume. Is that just for the new building, and when will that move actually take place, and when will the old building be vacated, and will you have any... Will you be using any of the old building, do you know?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, this is for the new building. Our plan, I believe, at the current time is to move in early April and actually take possession of that facility. We will be completely vacating the facility that we're in now in downtown Kodiak. That facility is going to be backfilled by other state tenants, and then they'll be giving up leases that they're in, and so there will be savings somewhere within state government that will partially offset these increased operating costs, but probably Not entirely, because as you know, this is a larger facility than we're currently in. It has lab space and some things that we've really been lacking in Kodiak. And
it's a very exciting project. I saw it before I left in December, and anxious to see it fully utilized.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. One last question on the King Salmon studies at $10 million. It's over 3 years, correct? There's $10 million, $10 million, $10 million that we requested. Is that the idea?
Yes.
So $30 million total?
That's correct. It's actually the projects, when we lay them out, are over a five-year time span. But the funding is slightly front-loaded, I guess I would say, to allow us to get those projects up and running.
And do you have the nature of the research, what the plan is, who's going to do it? Is it going to be the university? Is it going to be the department? Are you going to outsource it, et cetera?
Mr. Chair, it'll probably be a combination of those things. Some of the funding is slated to go to the university for some projects where they have some expertise. Some of the projects will be done by our staff, especially the ones that are additive to something that we're already doing, where we can add it onto a project that we have in the field. But we are looking as much as possible at partnering with other groups that have an interest in Chinook research, and possibly contracting some of it. So there will be a variety of ways that it's implemented.
So the $10 million per se is not for an entirely new study dedicated to a specific aspect of King's. The $10 million, parts of it can be used for ongoing studies that are already in the hopper for various other approaches?
Mr. Chair, there are a couple of cases where we have a project that is important to our understanding of what's happening with the stock, where there's no future funding for it. There are a couple of projects like that are contained in the research plan that are proposed for funding. But for the most part, this is an addition to our current program. So it's not things that are already ongoing. It's new projects to answer questions and collect information that we don't currently collect.
Thank you.
Just a very simple question. How do the capital budgets compare to last year, 16.6? Can you tell us that?
Mr. Chairman, I, with the exception of that one $10 million project, I think it's higher because of that $10 million project. But I think we had more projects last year, but probably not as high of a dollar amount. I could certainly give it to you.
I'm curious. Thank you.
Yeah, just working from memory, though. I think of these, just to give you a follow-up there, several of these are recurring types of requests. We have deferred maintenance. We have boat access facilities. Those kinds of things are recurring in nature. The new ones on here are the photosensus and the licensing modernization, and the sport fishing survey projects, as well as the Chinook initiative.
Senator Egan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one more question. So this $10 million, does this help the new Fairbanks hatchery? Or is it specifically the Matsu area and the Kuskokwim, or Yukon Kuskokwim?
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Egan, it's a statewide initiative. So the Yukon has included the Kuskokwim, the Nooshigak, Chignik, Karluk, Susitna, Kenai, Copper River, four stocks in Southeast Alaska. So it's statewide, and it will help the Fairbanks area to the extent that we can learn more about what's happening on the Yukon. Some of those folks fish in the Copper River. So those types of things. But it's not specific to enhancement opportunities. So one of the other things that I think people are really interested in this time of low productivity that we've been taking a look at is, what opportunities do we have to do additional stocking, enhancement, those types of things on Chinook salmon? And that is a place where both the Fairbanks hatchery and the Anchorage hatchery, I think, could really come into play in providing additional opportunity. So that's something that we've been taking a hard look at, and we have a separate report that talks about some of the potential that we see, some of the challenges, so that we're, you know, we're taking a look at where we could implement more of that.
Yeah, I apologize. It's not a bad thing with me. I was just curious.
Oh, I thought you were going to offer to give all $30 million to the MATSU.
Right.
Thank
you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. You guys are almost done, correct? We have a staff member from Ledge Finance, Lacey Sanders, and the senator had a question about how does it compare from years past. Would you be able to help us with that information? What? Okay. 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 Are there any other questions at this point for the commissioner and assistants? No? Seeing none? We may have some other questions. So can you get to us, Senator Stevens, what I asked for earlier was the department's missions, goals, what drives what it does. And if you can get that to our my assistant over here, Steve, that would be great. We'd give it to the rest of the committee, just so I have an idea of how, what drives the decisions or what drives the projects within the department. So seeing no additional questions, or is there any closing statements you'd like to make? And then we'll move on.
Mr. Chair, I don't believe I have anything else. Appreciate your time and attention, and I think, you know, we may get into more detail on some of these things as we move through the hearing.
Yeah, as we start to look over, we may have some more questions. And then I'd ask Lacey if, at the next meeting, if we need to bring you on board to help us with that question. Maybe actually you can find that question between now and then, how does it compare to last year, so we can get that to Senator Stevens and the rest of us.
Mr. Chairman, we can certainly provide that too. And also, as you know, kind of getting into whatever level of detail the subcommittee might like, we've got meetings now scheduled, one of kind of a fish meeting with Sport Fish and Comfish, and then a second meeting with Wildlife Conservation, Habitat and Subsistence. So we'd have the directors available and be able to go into any level of detail the subcommittee might like to.
Okay. So I just want to double check. Next meeting is February 21st at 5. Is that my reading correctly? Okay. So our next meeting will be Thursday, February 21st at 5, and it's with the House in room 519. With that, I have no further questions. I'm sorry about our man on the phone. I hope he hung in there with us. appreciate the information. Appreciate the discussions, and we'll start to build on this. Thank you. With that, again, our meeting's 21st at 5 p.m. and 519 at the House, and the meeting is adjourned.